this opener than you did a year ago? Have you been knowing the team better?
Yeah, I think everybody knows a little bit more with a year's experience, so yes.
When did Trevor Burton first kind of get on your radar?
Who?
Burton.
Trey?
Trey Burton.
Not Trevor. Trey, yeah.
Yeah, Trey Burton get on your radar, and was he a guy that maybe you guys thought that might not be drafted, you all targeted him?
I don't think we rated him that way. We rated him that he could have been a draft pick, so he was on our board from that standpoint. You know, he's a very versatile player. He was actually an outstanding high school quarterback and went to Florida originally to be a quarterback. And then they started moving him all around. He played tight end. He played H-back. He played running back. He played receiver. So, you know, it was one of those versatile players that we kind of covet. So he was a guy that we had through the whole draft process that we were really interested in. Obviously, late in the draft, we ended up taking a couple defensive guys there. So, you know, after we drafted Bo in the seventh round, you start to kind of look at your board and say, who do we want and can we possibly get for undrafted free agents? And he was a guy that was a priority guy for us.
So the other day, Bill Davis mentioned that he was really pleased with Nate Allen, his mental toughness. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, from your vantage point, being around him, do you feel the same way? And how do you gauge that? What is it that if you agree, that stands out about Nate?
I've seen the one thing I love about Nate, I've seen the same Nate since the first day we've been here till today. You know, he's got a great demeanor about himself. You know, he's always he's one of those guys you can just label professional. He comes here every single day trying to get better. You know, Nate's not a guy that has bad days. You know, sometimes you see a guy walking down the hall and all of a sudden their shoulders are slumped or something is bothering him or whatever. Nate's not that type of guy. He's coming here every single day with a mindset that he's going to get better. And I've seen that from him. There's he's striving to constantly improve, and that's a real admirable quality to have. But I think a lot of that takes, you have to be mentally tough to do that. You know, no matter what's gone on, you know, that you're not controlling your life through outside influences. And I think Nate's a prime example of that. So I agree with Billy that he is a real mentally tough guy.
And how is he a better player? You mentioned he's a better player from the end of last year.
I just think he has better knowledge, better experience. Things have slowed down for him mentally. You can see him starting to process things at a quicker rate. I think just because he's a lot more comfortable, and he's a guy that was in a lot of different systems and kind of had a lot of different coaches in the last couple of years. So I think he's handled it really well. It's a positive for him that Billy's still here, that John's still here, Todd's still here, that, you know, the defensive scheme and the coaches on that side haven't changed. So I think he's really kind of benefiting from that. So
you guys are at the top of the league last year in turnover ratio. Is that something that you think is repeatable, or do you
I mean, I think it's something that we're always striving for. I mean, we talk about self-inflicted wounds, SIWs, and obviously the turnover game is a huge part of that. We want to create them on the defensive side of the ball, and then we want to be a real good ball security team on the offensive side of the ball. We were when I was at Oregon, and we were successful, and we were last year, and we were successful. But there's a direct correlation between winning the turnover battle in games and winning games. So, you know, we try to stress that to our guys. I think we have multiple quarterbacks that have a really good understanding of what we want to do and don't really put the ball in harm's way, and we're always trying to make sure that we secure the football when we're running with it. So it still will be a big part of what we emphasize and teach all the time.
In your 5 years as head coach, have your defenses been more equipped to handle tempo because of what you're doing in practice?
I would think so. I mean, it's probably a byproduct of it. It's not the reason of it, but they face it every day. So, you know, when people tried to tempo us in college, it was like, this is what we've seen every single day in practice, so it's not like you're going to sneak up on us and run a tempo play. That's what they're used to. You know, the game, I think, for our guys really slows down in college on Saturdays and in the pros on Sundays because of the pace and tempo that we practice on the practice field. So I think they get a better chance. You know, people are breaking the huddle. You're looking for, all right, what are they in? What's the personnel? You already know the personnel coming out of the huddle. You're ready. You're equipped with the calls that you're going to make depending on where the tight end deploys and all that. So I think it's one of the unintended consequences, but it really helps if people do try to tempo us.
Are you expecting more college and pro teams playing tempo?
I think you are a little bit. You know, I think there's a little bit more in this league. A lot in college are, you know, but I think it's probably a trickle-up effect. A lot in high school are. So, you know, it's kind of started at a lower level and moved up. But I also think because the players have been trained in it. So when you're teaching people in the NFL now tempo, well, Brad Smith was a up-tempo quarterback at Missouri. I mean, he understands it. G.J. Kenny did that at Tulsa. He understands it. Some of the receivers we have ran it in their systems. They have Jeremy Maclin ran it when he was at Missouri. So it's not like when you start to introduce a concept to some people, they don't understand it. There's a lot of guys that are coming up through the college ranks that are now in the NFL that have done it at the college level. It's just a matter of how do you, what are your mechanics to get it done? But I think that's a one of those things that's kind of coming from the bottom up. So.
Was that at the forefront of your mind when you brought Brad in last year that he had that experience in Missouri and up to the system?
No, it wasn't at the forefront. That's just another byproduct. One of the things that – the big thing that attracted us to Brad was what an outstanding special teams player at the receiver spot. And he may be one of the better wide receiver special teams player in the league. You know, he's running down and covering and tackling guys on kickoff. He can return kicks. He's on the punt team. He's on the punt return team. So the first thing that kind of got on our radar about him is we knew coming in he wasn't going to be a 1, 2, or 3 receiver. So then the first question we ask about anybody that's 4, 5, or 6 as a receiver is, how can he impact special teams? And I think that's where Brad really stands out as a special teams player, along with a really good skill set as a as an offensive guy with the ball in his hand. So,
at what point in your coaching career did you decide you wanted Temple to be part of your arsenal or something you wanted to use?
We started to use it back when we were at New Hampshire. And I started to become a coordinator and just what things are difficult on a defense to defend. And some of those things were, you know, that when you were on the defensive side of the ball, that was hard for us to handle. So, you know, why wouldn't we do something that was hard for defenses to handle to try to get them out of their comfort zone? So back then.
As a believer in your system, your offensive system, but obviously a coach that has done a good job of playing your player's skill sets, how do you balance the two, particularly when you have a player that may be the best at what he does?
I'm lost.
The system versus individual talent.
Well, our system has always revolved around our players, so it's always been personnel driven, and I think that's the first premise of what we do offensively is what do we have deployed to us from a personnel standpoint, and then how do we put those guys in the best situation where they can be successful. So it's never been the other way around. It's the, let's try to figure out if these are the guys we have right now, then how do we best use them. You know, you obviously there's a process you can go through to acquire people. Ideally we would like to have this and this, but you don't always get what you want. You know, you can say, hey, you coveted this guy, they got picked before you had an opportunity to pick, you know, so it's a little bit different, but you still have to kind of mold it around what you have personnel wise you can tweak that on a yearly basis. You know, we'd like to kind of move in this direction, so now we got an opportunity to do it. But but at the end of the day, when you're getting ready to play a game and when you're looking at it on just a weekly basis, is what do we have available to us? So if we were to get an injury or two this week in a game, then our offense would look a little bit different next week because these are the guys that are playing. You know, you still have to tailor to their strengths. So.
Is the versatility that you have at every position still set, is that what you're talking about? If you do have someone hurt, you can go with this. If you do have maybe a team take
I don't
away
know from
this.
But what I'm not talking about versatility wise is what I'm saying is if all of a sudden you have a game where, you know, you lose 3 tight ends, well, you can't just say, well, if we had a tight end, we'd be really good on offense. What you got to go out and play the next week without 3 tight ends and try to put something together that will work. And I think the ability to have guys that can have some versatility help in those manners, it's kind of a contingency plan, so to speak, I guess.
Don't you have to have versatility to go tempo and just because you want to keep guys on the field and the two kind of go hand in hand?
I don't think the two go hand in hand. You know, I watched Navy play Ohio State last week, and Navy did some tempo, and they just kept the same guys on the field all the time. So they, you know, but they have a great system in terms of what they do. So I just think it helps, but it doesn't. It's not. They don't have to be together to do that. So.
So those quarterbacks that have played under you have low interception numbers. What do you
picture? We bench them if they throw more than 2. Now. I've just been really fortunate in that the guys I've had an opportunity to coach really understood what we were trying to get accomplished. And they understood the value. And as we talked about earlier about the turnover question, is that we spend a lot of time on that. And you know, sometimes throwing the ball away is more valuable than trying to force it in there and just really understanding and managing the game. But I've been fortunate to have some really, really smart guys playing the quarterback position. And a lot about being a good quarterback is being a great decision maker first and foremost. And I've just been fortunate to be around a bunch of guys who are really good decision makers. So.
The curtain goes up on this draft class Sunday. What sort of expectations do you have for these rookies in the first game?
I have the same expectations for everybody, to go out there and play to the best of your ability. So I don't put any more on the draft class than I do on a second-year player or I do on Trent Cole or Todd Herrmanns that have been around for a long, long time. So, you know, the curfew on the draft class was up the day they set foot on that field for the offseason program. They were Philadelphia Eagles the first day they stepped on that field, and they still are now. So our expectations are the same for all those guys. We don't look at them any differently, and we don't give a guy a pass. Well, it's okay for you to not perform well. It's okay for you to not have great effort. It's okay for you to miss something just because you're a rookie. It's you know, what do we believe your ability is, and are you playing up to your ability? And that's kind of how we'll judge anybody, whether you're a rookie or you're a 10 or 11 year guy.
In the spring, you spoke about the amount of man-to-man coverage you saw last season. Are you anticipating the same thing this season?
I don't know if we anticipate. I just think you kind of go off of who you play, and some teams going into the game, it's more than other teams. But at the end of the day, you let the game unfold as the game unfolds, and as we like to say, you make sure you have enough tools in your toolbox so that if you need a Phillips screwdriver, you use it. If you need a hammer, you have it. You know, what you don't want to be caught short is all of a sudden they are playing one coverage that you didn't expect them to play, but you don't have anything to combat it. So we feel like we do in our system have plays that can be run versus man, plays that can be run versus zone. So we feel, you know, we'll see how the game itself unfolds.
Is there anything about that? Did you go to the Navy, Ohio State game, just because it was close and you could get to a game? Or was there something?
No, I went as a scout. Tommy Gamble was going down to the game. I was in the morning, and we were talking, and he said, I asked him what he was doing. He was going down to Ohio State, and I told him I'd jump in a car and go with him.
Speaking of one of your tools, in the Saints game, your backup running backs only played two snaps, and they didn't get a carry. Did you look at that area in adding Sproles? And you've been adamant that he is a running back. Is that
no?
Had nothing to do with
no. We didn't look at the Saints game and say our running backs didn't get any carries, so let's go get another running back. It was just situation was presented where you had a dynamic returner that's a outstanding football player, but it had nothing to do with really a reflection on Bryce or Chris. It was just, you know, I think maybe it's the same way. I don't know if you guys play fantasy league, but if someone said, hey, you get a chance to get Darren Sproles, I'm in. You know, when they said we got a chance to get Darren Sproles, it wasn't an indication of anybody on our roster. It was that we really believed he was a dynamic football player and have seen him firsthand, whether it's coming out of the backfield, whether it's as a receiver, you know, returned a kickoff against us at the end of the game, but it wasn't that we were displeased with Chris or Bryce. So,
Chris, if Connor has to come out for any reason, is Brandon Graham the next guy up at the
We don't do anything, and I've mentioned this, I'll mention it today, and I'm probably 16 times during the year, and then during the playoffs is we have a training session today, we have a training session tomorrow, and we have a training session on Saturday, so that's when we'll sit down and kind of figure everything out, because I've been here. Last year on a Friday practice, James Casey pulled his groin and then didn't play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So then we have to sit down and talk about, well, what are we going to do? You know, and it really impacted us a lot. If you guys remember that game, we dressed three quarterbacks. The first time we dressed three because we didn't have an emergency quarterback. So we don't sit down on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and sit about, hey, what about this? What about this? What about that? You know, prime example was and I talked to our coaches about it last week when we were playing. Who were we going to get out? We had one lineman up or two linemen up on – for the Steelers game. Well, who was going to be the first guy out? We said, well, let's get through the first half if we can and then see if we can get Molk and Tolbin out. On the second play, Tolbin goes down. So we would actually think, is it Molk, Tolbin, or how many snaps are we going to get Lane? And I literally said over the headset, I guess that O-line plan's out the window. So you just got to take it as it is. We'll make our decisions on Axe or D-Axe. Sometimes it goes into Sunday morning where you have to work a guy out on the day of the game. So we don't spend any time at the beginning of the week. I'm not being evasive on who's going in or not going in. Everybody's up. Everybody's preparing like now that they're going to get a chance to play and that they're going to go, and that's the way they should. And then we'll make a decision as we get closer to the game time exactly who those seven guys are going to sit down on. So,
I should have asked, if Brandon put into a role of Jack, Brandon Graham, how do you think he would do? How has he come along this spring and summer?
I think he'd be great. I'm really excited about Brandon and thought he had a great preseason camp for us. And when Brandon goes in the game, we're excited about him going in the game. So.